Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. On the morning after Nancy Pelosi gave the longest floor speech in the history of the House of Representatives.
In 2006, Laura graduated with honors with a major in justice studies, but then she was stuck.
7 seconds there of her 8-hour speech, most of which was stories like that little wisp of immigrant dreamers. And Pelosi's speech had a point. It was to pressure Speaker Paul Ryan into allowing a floor debate in the House on legalizing the dreamers, like Mitch McConnell will be allowing in the Senate. And this is a morning on which the White House aide, accused of domestic violence, will apparently be leaving his job right away after revelations yesterday that the White House chief of staff knew about those allegations for months, let Porter stay on the job without a security clearance, and even defended him just yesterday as a man of good character, accepting Porter's denial of the charges and disbelieving both of his two ex-wives. The more we know about John Kelly, the more we seem to be learning that rather than being one of the grown-ups performing adult daycare on the president, as many first characterized him, that he's very Trumpian himself on race, on immigration, and on women. Later in the show, we'll talk in detail about John Kelly, Rob Porter, and Nancy Pelosi. Nevertheless, she persisted. But first, we'll ask, what do President Trump's new order to plan a military parade and Poland's new law forbidding discussion of their role in the Holocaust have in common? The answer, to my eye, is there are rational-sounding reasons being offered for each, but they both may really be to stoke the hardcore nationalism that helped both presidents rise to power. Here's how they dealt with the military parade idea last night on Late Night with Stephen Colbert.
It's the first ever presidential Macy's Trumpsgiving Day military parade. Join us as the streets of Washington, D.C. are filled with a thrilling display of authoritarian power. Fighter jets, nuclear subs, a dancing Steven Seagal, things that go bang, things that go boom, Uncle Sam on stilts with big boobs, the Trump youth with their salute to the Golden One, and Robert Mueller in a cage. Kids, don't forget to bring your poking sticks. It's the first ever presidential Macy's Trumpsgiving Day military parade.
So that was the Colbert take, ha ha ha. E.J. Dion's column in the Washington Post this morning says it's no laughing matter. E.J. writes, it's tempting to dismiss Trump's desire to have a big military parade as yet another ploy to change the subject. Trump knows perfectly well that many liberals are uneasy with massive demonstrations of military strength, so some who might raise their voices in dissent could draw back out of fear that he's baiting them and that they'll play into his hands. Trump clearly longs to be the lead figure on the reviewing stand, gazing out on the tanks and missiles as a tribute to his own power, while casting his critics as unpatriotic foes of our men and women in uniform. But, writes E.J. Dion, this is precisely why his parade proposal should be treated as dangerous and not simply another bout of Trumpian ego enhancement. It comes within days of Trump's charge that Democrats who did not stand and cheer him during his State of the Union address could be guilty of treason. When a leader who often praises strong men abroad defines routine political opposition as disloyalty to country and then suggests hauling out the military to march in our streets as he looks down from on high, friends of freedom should take notice. And further, E.J. Dion warns that those who minimize the portrayals of Trump as an autocrat because our freedoms are still intact miss the point. He writes, in enduring democracies such as ours, liberty is eroded slowly by politicians who undermine the norms and practices that protect it. There is good reason that we have not made military parades a standard part of our patriotic repertoire. So that from E.J. Dion's column in the Washington Post this morning. With me now is Rick Nowak, or I'm going to get him to correctly pronounce his last name for us in a minute. Washington Post foreign affairs reporter based in Berlin, who's written this week both about Poland's new Holocaust speech law and the Trump military parade idea, comparing it to those in Europe and elsewhere. His article yesterday was called "Why Trump's Military Parade Won't Be Like the One in France." Rick, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Good morning, and thanks for the invite to your on your show.
And could you pronounce your last name for me?
You pronounced it absolutely correctly.
Rick
Nowak.
Nowak. Welcome
Nowak.
To WNYC. Yeah. Okay. So in France, it's the Bastille Day Parade. It is a big display of tanks and missiles and things like that, right?
Yes, Bastille Day Parade, it's a military parade that has been held for longer than a century, and it's very much rooted in the history of France. It is supposed to commemorate the turning point of the French Revolution, and it's been long associated with that military parade, which is also which was also established in order to connect the society and also the French military. So there's lots of reasons why this military parade has been held and has been associated with that particular day in French history for such a long time. And in more recent days or more recent years, it has also become a sign of France's inclusiveness when it comes to military cooperation. Over the last couple of years, foreign troops, for instance, from Germany or India, have participated in exactly that parade to send a message out to the world that France is trying to work together with other countries, with other people.
You wrote in your article that French leaders have used their annual military parade to set a pacifist agenda. That's counterintuitive. How do they do that?
Yes, I think they have set a pacifist signal, or they have sent pacifist signals in the past by, for instance, as I just said, inviting foreign troops, for instance, German troops, to the Champs-Élysées. And one of the last times when German soldiers were marching on the Champs-Élysées, that was in 1940, when Germany started occupying Paris. So there is some, or over the last years, there has been a lot of historic symbolism involved in that parade. And it's not just that parade. We should also keep that in mind, because what happens afterwards and before that parade is perhaps even more important. The soldiers and troops involved in that parade, they then go out to various parts of town, to various districts, and they speak to the mayors there, they speak to people, they simply discuss their role in society. And I think that's one of the key parts. When I talked yesterday to analysts and experts and columnists in France, they repeatedly mentioned exactly that aspect of the parade. It's not just, or it's not mainly about showing military strength or showing weapons or showing or representing might, military might. It's mainly about trying to bridge that divide between the military and society.
You quote a fellow at the London School of Economics who called Trump's plan a strongman military parade and part of Trump's wannabe despot checklist. We know that Putin and Kim Jong-un also have military parades. In fact, I think Kim Jong-un is having one today. How would a strongman military parade be different from the one you just described in France?
Well, I think there is quite a big difference when it comes to how those parades were created or set up. In France, we have a parade that's very much rooted in history, that's very much rooted in the society of this country. I think if Trump were to really go ahead with his plans in setting up an alternative parade in the United States, I think it would be perceived as being for a very different reason, in order to put himself into the spotlight. That might not necessarily be the case, and in fact, the White House has repeatedly stressed that it's a celebration of the U.S. military, and that's a fair point. But I think what Trump is misunderstanding here is the message it would really send out, not only to the nation, but also the entire world, that he really is trying to get on the same level as, for instance, Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong-un with their military parades, because those parades are much bigger than the French. And he did say he wants to top the French parade.
Here's a Republican Senator John Kennedy of Oklahoma, reacting negatively to Trump's idea yesterday.
I don't think it's a particularly good idea. Confidence is silent. Insecurities are loud. When you're the most powerful nation in all of human history, you don't have to show it off.
All right, there's Republican Senator John Kennedy of Oklahoma, not well liked, not well mic'd, but he said confidence is quiet, insecurity is loud, we're the strongest nation on earth and everybody knows it. And he's not the first U.S. senator named John Kennedy, but he's probably the first Republican one. Trump says he would be doing this to celebrate our men and women in uniform rather than the weapons. But we have something like that already, Rick, called the Veterans Day Parade. Do they have anything like that in Europe?
Well, in France, that really is the Bastille Day Parade, where society and the military come together. There isn't really any specific other day. In Germany, you don't really have, for obvious historical reasons, so you don't really have a day to celebrate the military. There are some days in Europe, or some events too, that are supposed to honor the military and the troops. I wouldn't say they're in the same, or they have the same extent as, for instance, Veterans Day in the U.S. So that's a tradition that's much more common and much more prevalent in the U.S.
So, listeners, I want to open up the phones for a little informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific poll. And this is for anyone currently serving in the military in any capacity, full-time enlisted or in the reserves or any other current capacity, or any Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans. Let's make this for current service people and roughly today's generation of vets who are actually deployed to war zones recently. You Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, if any of you happen to be listening right now, do you want a Washington, D.C. military parade? And if it happens, would you feel that this is about honoring you, as the White House says it would be, even while planning to roll tanks and things and display missiles and things on Pennsylvania Avenue? 212-433-WNYC. Everybody else hold off for now. 212-433-9692. For anyone currently serving in the military in any capacity, full-time enlisted or in the reserves or any other current capacity, or any Iraq or Afghanistan war veterans, let's make this for current service people and roughly today's generation of vets who are actually deployed to war zones. If any of you happen to be listening right now, do you want a Washington, D.C. military parade? And if it happens, would you feel that this is honoring you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, as we continue with Washington Post correspondent Rick Nowak in Berlin. And Rick, while calls are coming in from service people and Iraq and Afghanistan vets on the military parade, I want to ask about your reporting on the controversial new law in Poland limiting what people in that country can say about the Holocaust. What kind of speech does that law ban exactly?
Well, Polish President Duda signed a law on Tuesday this week banning people from accusing Poland of Holocaust atrocities committed by the Nazis, and also from referring to concentration camps as Polish death camps. And that really did heighten tensions with the United States and Israel, but also some European countries, including France, which have harshly criticized that measure. I mean, Duda also announced on Tuesday that he would ask the country's constitutional tribunal to review the bill, to check whether it complies with Poland's fundamental rights, such as, for instance, freedom of speech. But the problem here is that the courts in Poland aren't considered to be really independent. And that also has to do with the government itself, which has weakened the rule of law in Poland over the last 2-3 years.
One of your articles was headlined, "Polish President Signs Holocaust Bill Drawing Rare U.S. Rebuke." What did the Trump administration have to say about this?
Well, they say that it might infringe upon values such as, for instance, the freedom of speech, even though, of course, stands accused of also trying to do the same. But in this context, it very much is focused on that Holocaust law and what it would do, for instance, to educational measures, journalism, but also academia. Although, theoretically, the president has stressed that academics and I think journalists will be exempted or not be affected by this law. But the problem is, what about school teachers, for instance? What about guides who work in Auschwitz and show, you know, the place where all those horrible crimes occurred to students or to any other visitors? And I think there is a lot of fear, not only in Israel and the United States, but across other countries, that this might have a major effect on education about Holocaust, about the Holocaust, and about what happened during the Second World War, because historians have repeatedly emphasized that there were incidents where Polish citizens were alleged of collaborating with the Nazis, and those statements would technically now be prohibited in Poland.
I see that Israel has reacted even more strongly than the United States, calling the Polish law Holocaust denial. I'm looking at a Jerusalem Post article from today that's about Holocaust survivors who are like 90 years old and 95 years old breaking into the Polish embassy in Tel Aviv in protest. But I'm trying to figure out if Holocaust denial is an overstatement. I mean, technically, they don't seem to be denying the Holocaust, just trying to force people to blame it on German occupation of Poland, not on the Polish government or Polish people. Is that accurate, or is that letting them off the hook too much?
Yeah, I think there have been quite a lot of overstatements on both sides over the course of the last weeks. And Holocaust denial here in Germany would probably be defined quite differently than that minister, I think you're quoting from Israel, defined it. I think the majority here in Europe and elsewhere would probably agree that it's it doesn't constitute Holocaust denial, but it does constitute to many a dangerous development, which hasn't, you know, it wasn't really expected. There had been some xenophobic actions and statements by the Polish government, the right-wing Polish government, over the last few years. But what the Jewish organizations I've spoken to over the last few days have told me is that there has been a surge in anti-Semitism, and that is completely unprecedented. At the same time, though, I spoke to the director of the Jewish American Committee in Warsaw, and what she said was that both sides, so Israel and Poland, have contributed to the heightening of tensions and basically created a situation where it's really hard to get out of it. I think the Polish government does realize the backlash it has triggered, and the Polish president even recently said that he doesn't really think it's going to be implemented or it's going to be hard to really prosecute people with this law. So it's mainly a symbolic move, but it has triggered a major backlash. And you have to consider that Poland has offended the majority of the EU over the last two years, and some of the only allies of that country used to be Israel and the U.S., and that is now also in doubt.
Huh. Before we take some calls from service people and vets on the idea of a Trump military parade, one of your articles suggests that Poland's president, Duda, signed this law largely because, like Trump, he is a right-wing culture war populist, and it's in his interest to stoke nationalism, which signing this law is doing. Can you elaborate on that analysis and how accepted it is?
Well, I don't think this is really targeting, or this was a description of Duda, the president himself. I think the Polish government has evolved over the last 2-3 years to become more extreme. It always was a right-wing party, the Law and Justice Party, but over the last few years it has tried to push through reforms that are considered quite nationalistic. For instance, it is trying, or it has brought up again, the question of reparations for World War II crimes committed by the Nazis. So that has opened new wounds and new problems between Poland and Germany. Then the controversial law reform, which very much negatively impacted, or has provoked a lot of backlash among judges in Europe. So I think there have been quite a few signs that this government is deliberately trying to stoke some nationalist tendencies in Poland. And in fact, when you remember the march in November in Warsaw, when 60,000 people marched alongside some Nazis and some far-right people, the Polish government refrained for days to condemn exactly that march. And that was, I think, one of the wake-up calls for Western Europe that something might be going wrong in Poland.
My guest is Washington Post correspondent Rick Nowak, who's in Berlin, and he's been writing both about the Donald Trump military parade proposal for Washington, D.C., and about Poland's new law limiting discussion of the Holocaust in that country in certain ways. And we did put out a call, and now all our lines are full with either current service people or Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans who are going to answer the question, do you want a military parade in D.C.? Would this be honoring you, as the White House claims it would? Lou in Nanuet, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lou.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. When and where did you serve?
Well, it was both in Enduring Freedom and Desert Storm. Air Force veteran.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you. I would not feel honored by having this parade. It doesn't feel like a parade to honor us. It feels like a parade to just showboat to keep up with North Korea, who I personally don't want to do. And to me, it just seems like your military, you know, weapons and your what you have should be kept more secret rather than trying to put it on display to show how much we have. And also, if you really, in my opinion, if you really wanted to honor the veterans and the military, instead of wasting millions of dollars on a parade, put that money into their pay, you know, where these guys are making, you know, less than minimum wage to risk their life for us. You know, it just doesn't make sense to spend all that money and time doing a showboat parade when that money could be put to much better use.
Lou, thank you very much. Brian in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hey, Brian.
Hey, good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
And thank you.
I am currently serving, and I'm also a veteran of both the Iraq and the Afghanistan theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And as a soldier, I would not want the parade, because I wouldn't want to be involved in it, and therefore I would not subject my fellow soldiers to being involved in it. And that's mostly because you spend a lot of time, you know, valuable training time, you know, preparing for these things and standing around rehearsing. And I wouldn't want to do that. And as a citizen, I also would not want to endure the cost of it. But the converse of that is there is a value added to these types of displays. And this is not something that's uncommon. These things happen all the time across the country at different levels. The scale of it would be new. But we've done these parades. Citizens generally love the parades. They love the displays. And we also included foreign troops that were training with us to highlight our alliances and our different endeavors throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that trying to draw parallels to North Korea, it's sort of spinning out of control. I think it's really a stretch, and it detracts from more important topics.
Tell us more about some of these parades or other kinds of displays that take place around the country. And I did read, prepping for this segment, that American troops do train for these kinds of displays already. So do they take place in the cities and towns near the military bases in the United States? Is that mostly where they happen?
It, most typically, they'll happen, you know, on base. They'll open the base for, you know, to the public for the event. The different states, the National Guard elements, they have an annual, they call it Governor's Military Pass and Review, which is what this is. This would be a pass and review. It's a structured, you know, formalized event. There's actually, you know, documents, there's, you know, training manuals and pamphlets that dictate how they operate. And, you know, those are usually done on an annual basis, and it's the, you know, major commands represent their elements with their equipment. And it's very, very similar to what President Trump has proposed. It's just it being in Washington, D.C. at that scale is the only thing that's really unique about it.
Do you think they could do it in such a way in D.C. with Trump as president that it wouldn't have the effect of it looking like a strongman military parade, as that guy from London called it? It sounds like you don't trust, like you kind of are sympathetic to the idea, but you also don't trust that Trump isn't doing this primarily to enhance his sort of autocrat credentials.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if those parallels are legitimate, and it's hard, it's really subjective. And I think the answer to your question, I think, is no, because I think that everybody approaches his actions with great skepticism, regardless of what they are. So I don't think that it would be able to be successfully done without those conclusions or that perception being, you know, prevalent.
Brian, thank you so much for your service and for your call. Please call us again.
Thank you.
Chris in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. You're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
Good. How you doing? Where'd you serve?
Doing well. So I served. I actually joined during Desert Storm. And I was one of the lucky ones who, realistically, that was so short that you got out. Yeah, by the time I was through basic training, we were basically done with it. I am a disabled vet, so I continued to serve and was put out of the military on medical. My father and my grandfather both retired from the military, and I grew up in Fort Bragg. Yeah, so the military is a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, the whole point was that you didn't serve for recognition. And my father... My grandfather was one of the first Rangers and one of the first Green Berets. My father and my grandfather served in the same Green Beret unit together in the 60s. Highly decorated, and their perspective was, no, you don't do it for that reason. You do it for the fact that we're out there supporting the concepts that we're supposed to believe in. And I can also tell you, as a soldier, there's not a single soldier out there that wants to be a part of a parade call. It's just not something that anybody's really looking for. I do think that it's a waste of resources, and 100%. Again, you get the recognition everywhere you go. When you're a soldier, if you're a vet, people are always happy to say, you know, thank you for your service. We know that the public supports us. We're not looking for somebody to come in and say, you know, hey, look at this great display of our power. That has nothing to do with what we do. And again, I grew up at Fort Bragg. We had parades all the time. We didn't have tanks coming down the street. The biggest thing we had was, you know, the Thunderbirds or something like that going through and doing an air show. Those kinds of things, it was about the soldiers, the individuals. It wasn't about power. It was about supporting and recognizing what they were doing. And this sounds nothing like that.
Chris, thank you so much for your service and your call. And Olnad in Albany, you're going to be our last caller on this, and we've only got about 30 seconds for you. Hi.
Hello.
Did I get your name right? Is it Olnad?
No, it's Roland.
Oh, Roland. I'm sorry. I got a misspelling here. Good, Roland. Thanks for
calling.
Thanks for calling.
I've been to the parade in China, and I've been to Bastille Day, and I've always theorized that part of the reason why the French have the parade is because they had been appeasers in the Second World War, and the parade is a way of showing that they do have military might, Patton and Baudet did not exercise on behalf of the French people.
Roland, I'm going to leave it there for time because we're going to run out of, we're going to lose our reporter's line here in just a second. And since you're a reporter on Europe, mostly based in Europe, how much do you think, I have a feeling the French people would not react well to Roland's description of why they have a military parade on Bastille Day there, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, the French usually tend to think about traditions or things they do in a very historical context. And I think this isn't just an argument they make. They really do believe in it. A lot of things that happen in France are very much rooted in society and in theoretical concepts. And I think this parade is quite... quite a lot rooted in the fact that you do want to put something on display. You do want to show strength because the French are really proud of their country, just like Americans are proud of the U.S. But they also want to do it in a way that it doesn't offend anyone, that it doesn't offend the Germans, for instance, their direct neighbor. And I think the fear is that if Trump were to pursue his plans with a parade, it would look much differently. At least it would look very different than European parades.
Rick Nowak, Washington Post correspondent based in Berlin, who's been covering both the Poland law limiting speech about the Holocaust and the Trump parade proposal. Rick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for inviting me on your show.